This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3119 for Thursday, the 16th of July, 2020. Today's show is entitled Converting to FFS2. It is hosted by ZenFloater2 and is about 40 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is FFS2, Fujita encryption and UUIDs and 9-volt batteries.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, boys and girls from Zen Floater, your favorite magical forest squirrel, farmer human being converted into squirrel by aliens in the 1960s. And that is my promo intro line for my character, Zen Floater the Squirrel. And I thought I would do another audio here and go back and read through some of the comments that people have posted to my last three shows, which span over a year. I'm not a frequent host here, but I'm finding that I am enjoying doing what I'm doing, so I'll do it for a little while and see what happens. On Fujita as a desktop, I got a comment from Luna Jenberg that says, "Hello, we have Firefox both as a flat pack and a snap now." Well, I didn't know that, Luna. Thank you very much. I had heard that they'd made a snap out of Chromium, but I hadn't heard anything about Firefox. So that is an interesting development. And I think it's about time that they did this. I do think it's about time. Let's go to my Fujita serve. Show. And I got a comment by Norrist. The idea of running your home router off a read-only file system is very interesting, and it is. It's very interesting. Also, in OpenBSD, once you get your system set up, you can put it into a special mode that won't allow any writes to the hard drive at all. And you can make a router that you cannot write to the hard drive under any circumstances. And you could put that on a timer. Say after it boots up within an hour, it just flips into that mode. That's if you wanted to take Fujita from the Raspberry Pi ISO or image that Kaw has on Fujita.org and build that router. That way you can put a timer on there after it boots to just lock down everything to where no one can mess with anything. And that way the only way to change anything would be to unplug the power physically and take the USB key disk out to an OpenBSD desktop somewhere or server and work on it. But yeah, you've got some options there. Let me go back even farther in time here to there's a show I did a year ago concerning Spectre and Meltdown and OpenBSD in our future, which is still a concern of mine, and I will be talking somewhat in this audio about that. Because on the Lenovo IdeaPad that I just did a show on for the desktop, I decided to run Fujita, the 64-bit version of Fujita, on that, And on the main hard drive, I now have installed Linux Mint 19.3. And I was going to do some side-by-side comparisons. And of course, you know, Linux Mint is going to have a lot larger range of software that you can run. But I found it interesting that if you look at any of the Pharonix speed tests from years gone past, you see that OpenBSD is roughly four times slower than Linux or FreeBSD. It's pretty slow. And yesterday I did some speed tests on the IdeaPad and noticed that the AMD version of Fagota is only half as slow now as Linux Mint, and I attribute that partly due to their Spectre packages that they put in the Linux kernel, because the BIOS on that machine has not been touched since it was bought from the store, so it has whatever BIOS that they Lenovo put on it for Spectre. And I also noticed that on the Dell Mini 10, which is what I'm using to make this recording, my little Dell Mini 10, it's also just about half as slow as Linux Mint is on the larger i3-equipped IdeaPad that has a clock speed of like 3.1 gigahertz. That's opposed to this thing, the Dell Mini, which has a 1.6 gigahertz clock speed. And the Dell Mini is running the i386 version of OpenBSD, and it's only half as slow. And I did that by running Handbrake and converting some AUG files into MP3s and doing a few FFmpeg actions. I noticed that the Dell Mini is only roughly about half the speed of the IdeaPad, and it should be much slower, you'd think, with the 386 version of OpenBSD on it. So those Spectre patches, which do not work, they do not protect you on Linux or FreeBSD, have seriously chewed into your performance. That was a shock for me, because it felt kind of slow running Linux Mint. It's kind of doggy, and compared to most, you know, the previous years of Linux that I can remember. But anyway, there you have it. You can run your own test and come up with your own results. You know, there's two ways to patch for Spectre. One of them is the BIOS upgrade, and the other one is what the Linux kernel puts into effect when it boots. OpenBSD does not have any Spectre patches. They just decided to turn speculative processing off within the CPU. So if you have an i3 like that one over there, sitting over there, that has four cores on top, you know, four threads, whatever you want to call them, cores, you'll only see two on top running OpenBSD, because it shuts down speculative processing. Whereas on the Dell Mini 10 that I have here, it is an Intel N450 Atom processor, dual core, and we're running the 386 version, and when you run 386 OpenBSD, you don't have to worry about shutting off your other cores, because you don't have speculative processing in the 386 version. And the other thing is, the Intel N450 is totally immune to Spectre attacks. It was a processor that was made some 13 years ago that's really old. It has 1 gigabyte of RAM, and it is immune to Spectre and Meltdown. And I talked about that in the video that I made a year ago on Spectre and Meltdown. And there's one comment from Claudio. Hello, fellow Puffy disciple. Pretty good episode on the speculative execution stuff that Intel and others are dealing with. And don't feel alone, I also run OpenBSD as of late. Been dabbling with the BSDs since 3 years ago. Of all of them, OpenBSD is the closest to my heart, and it is to mine too. I mean, it's the best running one of the bunch, really. I mean, more stuff runs accurately in OpenBSD, I've found, than anything else I've played with. I'm running OpenBSD current on an old Toshiba Protege M400 convertible tablet PC, as well as on a ThinkPad X230, I think he said, at work. Yeah, certain things like wireless aren't up to par yet, as they are in Linux or even FreeBSD, which I also run on a laptop at work. But it is a great OS with great security and support. Another Hacker Public Radio contributor by the name of Sigflup, I think it is. And I've heard of him before. He's done. I've listened to a couple of his. Also runs OpenBSD. And to be honest, her use of it was what... and I'm trying to read this. My eyesight's going. I'm getting old. You've got to realize that. And her use of it was what piqued my curiosity to the OS. So rest assured, you're in good company as an OpenBSD user on Hacker Public Radio. Well, thank you very much, Claudio. And hello to Sigflop if you're still out there. I haven't heard a broadcast from Sigflop in a while, but I think it was a few years ago. I remember her making a podcast, and I listened to some of the past Hacker Public Radio episodes and heard that show. So anyway, I've talked about several things, and the fact that even Brian Lunduk, you know, and like him or hate him, Brian has made the comment, and so has his little group up there on YouTube, that, you know, Linux is really starting to get slow thanks to the Spectre patches. And, yeah, it is. It's awful, and it doesn't protect you from the Spectre or Meltdown attacks. They've proven that those patches won't work. That's what's so horrible about it. And that's the reason I did that podcast a year ago about Spectre Meltdown, my anger toward Intel and AMD and the management engine they put in, and the fact that their speculative processing that they designed in the CPUs is flawed. And, you know, it's a year later, and they're still releasing CPUs that have flawed processors. They're still trying to patch their way out of something that they need to redesign for, and they haven't done that yet from what I can gather. And that's a pretty bitter pill. You know, if you go out and buy a $3,000 desktop or something, or more expensive, and find out that it's still not patched up to stop a Spectre attack, that really stinks. And that's what got me into Fuguita and OpenBSD, and talking to Kawamoto over in Japan, the man who makes Fuguita. Originally, all he made was the i386 version of Fuguita, which is what I run on this Dell Mini 10, because it has only 1 gig of memory. And so I'll either run the i386 version of OpenBSD, which I have installed in the hard drive, or I will run the i386 version of Fuguita from a USB pen drive on it. And I won't run anything else because, you know, boot up, it's less than 80 megabytes. And then when you put a desktop on top of it, it's still down there, you know, somewhere around 200 megabytes or less, I believe. So you have plenty of room for a web browser, and I'm still using Firefox on it right now, as if we are still in 2007, as it was with Linux back then. And performance is fine. I don't have any complaints. Like I said, it's slower, naturally. Or it used to be slower than Linux. I don't think it is anymore. It's very competitive with Linux. Let's just put it that way. You don't notice the difference unless you're just running Handbrake all the time, and you notice that Handbrake on Linux might take you 50 minutes to rip some movie, where OpenBSD might take an hour and 40 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes, something like that. You do notice it, but it's not enough that I notice it, because the Dell Mini 10 takes my Wi-Fi routers, both of them, the one I built and the store-bought one, to the max, and it can fill a pipe. It writes to the USB pretty fast. Not as fast as the IdeaPad does. You know, USB's changed in the last 13 years. This is a 13-year-old, you know, notebook. What do you expect? And the USB that's on it is USB-B or something, I guess. Or maybe it's USB-A. I don't know. It's old USB. But I got a funny story to tell you. I've had OpenBSD, the i386 version, installed on this Dell Mini 10 for maybe 4 or 5 years. It hasn't been long. Before that, I ran Slackware on it. I ran the 64-bit version of Slackware. And then I ran the 386 version of Conoshet OS, which is a knockoff of Slackware. It's the free version. And I also ran Freenix, which is the free version of Slackware. And I made several videos on that that I put on my BitChute and library channels of those days. And enjoyed it. And I did most of that work right here on this Dell Mini 10. But, you know, Linux just got so fat that you can't run it in a gig of memory anymore. You'd have to run TinyCore Linux to do it. And that means the only two operating systems that I could really run on this would be NetBSD or OpenBSD or maybe TinyCore Linux, which I've tried and, you know, it's fun, but it doesn't have enough to keep me there. So OpenBSD is a good fit for me on this machine. And as of the last show that I did, I'm a very unobservant person, if you might have noticed. You know, I'm slow, I'm old, you know. When I was a kid, I've been a ham radio operator all my life, okay, since the early 60s. And I just found out that Kawamoto over in Japan is a ham radio operator too, and he's in his 50s somewhere. He's the guy that does this operating system I'm talking about, and he and I started exchanging mails, and he gave me some of his private information and some of his private YouTube accounts where he posts family videos and stuff. I'm not going to give all that away. But anyway, he's also making Morse code readers and senders using a Raspberry Pi 3 in Fuguita, which I thought was fascinating. And he's getting off into it. When I was a child in the 1960s before Vietnam, here's what I had. I had a Helicrafters receiver and a Hammerlin transmitter. They were all tube-type radios. And the only high-tech item that I had in the house that was mine was an AM transistor radio my grandparents gave me sometime at the turn of the 50s into the 60s. And it was a transistorized AM radio, which was a big deal. Because when I was a kid, everything was tube-based. And my neighbor who fought in World War II, Mr. Jackson, had a shortwave radio, and I forget what kind it was. I think it was a Bernstein and Appleby or something like that, a brand from a store that no longer exists, that had two large batteries in it, almost the size of a car battery. And it would take maybe 5 minutes to get that thing started. I mean, once you flipped it on, you had to wait for maybe 3 minutes for the tubes to warm up before you could start tuning it around, and it would stabilize, and you could tune in Radio France or the BBC or something, or Voice of America, and listen to shortwave, or you could listen to AM, or in his case, he could also listen to FM. And the FM bands was something brand new that none of us in Tulsa, Oklahoma had ever had. I certainly didn't have it. All I had was an AM radio. But Mr. Jackman was fascinated with this radio that my grandparents bought me because it was so tiny. This AM radio, it would fit in your hand. And of course, it was transistorized. And I'd take the back off of it to show him the battery, as opposed to the batteries that he had to buy for his radio. You know, for those two batteries he bought, he spent, $3 or $4 for both of those batteries, which back then was an incredible amount of money, because you got to remember, boys and girls, back then gasoline cost 3 cents a gallon. That's what my dad paid for it. When it went to 5 cents a gallon, he about hit the fan and threatened to have a revolt. And you could fill a car with groceries, an entire station wagon. My mom and I filled our station wagon with groceries one Thanksgiving and got my dad to hit the fan. He couldn't believe we bought that much damn food. She spent $20. That was an astronomical amount of money back then. So, these two big batteries that Bill Jackman would buy for his tube radios were huge. I could maybe show you some on the internet. They probably still make them, you know, I'm sure, for lanterns and stuff like that. But it took two of them to run this thing, and it would only run for maybe 4 or 5 hours before those batteries are dead, and it's gone. My AM transistorized radio, which I took the back of it off, it was plastic, to show Mr. Jackman, had a square battery in it, which fascinated him, and every other neighbor in the entire neighborhood had to come over and take a look at my radio. Because no one had ever seen a square battery. No one had ever seen a 9-volt square battery. This was high technology that no one had seen, not even the stores. And sure as crap, as soon as I wore that battery out, I had a hard time finding a replacement because they hadn't even come to the stores yet. So that radio sat without a battery for, I guess, about 3 months before we saw the first 9-volt radio batteries in a blister pack at your local pharmacy. Because typically you went to a pharmacy to get stuff like that. Grocery stores didn't carry them, and there was no Walmart back then. Walmart did not exist as a company. It was either Five and Dime, where you went in to buy your Army Men and playing cards, and your Jacks and chalk to mark up the sidewalk so you could have board games with the kids, or basketball or football if you had the money. But you couldn't find a 9-volt battery in a store like that. They wouldn't carry any high-technology items like that. That's too risky. You can't have high-risk items like that in a store. So anyway, we'd go to the pharmacy, and the pharmacy would have all kinds of batteries, and lo and behold, they had the 9-volt battery. Other than that, you could go to a Sears department store and order one, and they would let you know when it came in. But anyway, that just fascinated the neighborhood. So that was my high-technology item, and I still have that AM radio around here somewhere. It's quite old. It was made in Japan, and it's not American. Even though I know they have an American version, I saw some pictures of it. I did not get one of those. I got a Japanese-made version, and I don't remember the name of the company that made it. It might have been Sony. But at any rate, that was high technology when I'm a kid. So I'm fascinated about running something on this Dell Mini 10. I mean, this Dell Mini 10, if I could have this back in the 1960s, I would own this country and be able to take over the oil industry and everything else. I'd have the most powerful computer and smallest computer on the face of the planet. But at any rate, let me stop my rambling and just explain to you what I'm fixing to talk about next. Is on the last podcast, or maybe it was the previous one, I talked about the Dell Mini 10, and I talked about all the jacks that's on this thing. And let me just flip it around again. Here's an Ethernet port. There's a USB on the right-hand side of some kind. I guess a USB-B maybe, or A. Then there's a microphone and a headphone jack. And on the left side is VGA out, which I think I said was RGB last time. It's not. It's VGA. And two more USB ports, and that's it. And then there's a power plug on the back. And, you know, I hadn't even turned this thing upside down since I bought it. Because I bought three of these things and gave two of them to the daughters. And they've since thrown theirs away foolishly. But, you know, I noticed on the bottom of this there's two clips, and I can actually change the battery out on this thing, and it hasn't been changed out in 30 years, so I thought about contacting Dell to see if I could get another battery for it. I may not be able to get one. I might have to tear this battery apart and put new cells in it, but the battery's still there. It still seems to be working. I'm not in any rush on that, but it's a sealed unit. It has no CD-ROM or DVD reader in it. Because it is a sub-notebook, it's only 10 inches across on the screen. So it's very tiny. And for me, it's still easier to carry this thing around than the IdeaPad 330, I'm afraid. It is. And I'm just not getting that much out of that IdeaPad. So I've kind of shelved it for a little while. And I may end up installing OpenBSD on it, or continuing to run Fuguita, I guess, in the AMD version like I have been. But honestly, the keyboard on that thing is not as nice as the keyboard on the Dell Mini 10. Tactically speaking, it's not a chiclet keyboard on the Dell. It has some feeling to it. on the Dell Mini 10. The keyboard's better, and the trackpad works better, too. And that's what just pisses me off about all the new technology with Intel. You know, being a person that's a fan of new technology, as you can tell from my discussion of an AM radio some 50 years ago, that what they're giving us now really irritates me to death. Even though it was cheap, I'm not liking it. So anyway, as I said earlier, OpenBSD, the 386 version, had been installed on this Dell Mini 10, and it had been on here for probably 4 years, I guess. I decided to switch over, and I'm not unhappy that I did it because it saved the life of it, because if I'd stayed with Linux, it would be in the trash can. And that is just a crime. It is. So, originally when I installed the 386 version of OpenBSD on here, I kept upgrading it every release, every 6 months, and it has the original FastFile 1 system on it. FastFile System 1, FFS 1. And as of OpenBSD 6.7, they have upgraded their installers to the FastFile System 2. And you might ask, well, why didn't you just reinstall it? Well, I don't want to do that. You know? I don't want to do that. So I needed an external operating system that was OpenBSD-based to allow me to rsync all the files off of each partition one at a time onto a spare hard drive, USB hard drive, and then create the file systems from FSS, get rid of the FFS1 file system one partition at a time, and create a new FFS2 partition. And I've done that across all the partitions. There were 8 of them in here, I think, 7 or 8, and copied everything back, got the bootloader running, and now the Dell Mini 10 is on the FFS2 file system. And forced me to get a copy of Fuguita i386 to do that. Well, here's where the story gets interesting, and the exposure of my stupidity comes out. I'm not the most observant guy, obviously. At any rate, let me pause this for just a second. Well, at any rate, I downloaded the latest copy, patch 10, of Fuguita i386, and I noticed that Kawamoto had added 2 more features to the latest release of Fuguita. As of patch 10, you can now encrypt your D drive storage drive. In other words, that's the drive that you dump your memory off into when you shut the system down. That will have all of your web browser contents and SSH keys and everything. You can now dump that into an encrypted partition and also boot from that encrypted partition, which I thought was cool that he put that feature in there. He's also added the ability to put UUIDs in the NoAsk file, so you can specifically state a drive without having to use a drive pseudoname like SD0 or SD1 or HD0 or HD1, you know, so on and so forth. You can specify a UUID for your operating system drive and your D drive, which I thought was great. Those are 2 great enhancements. So I immediately downloaded the i386 file system, the FS copy, and zipped it. I made sure and checked the MD5 signature before I did, and put it to a USB key and booted it up in this little Dell Mini 10. Well, as I'm looking at it, you know, there's only 3 USB ports on here, and I thought, gee, wouldn't it be great if I could run this thing with an SD card like I do the IdeaPad 330? And all these years, I had not bothered to notice all the features of this Dell Mini 10, apparently, because as I ran my hand across the section where the SD card was on the Idea 330, I found something funny. Something felt funny down there. With my left hand, I thought, what in the hell is this? And I started picking at it with my fingernail, and out comes this little cover for an SD card slot. There's an SD card slot in the Dell Mini 10. You know, they made this thing 13 years ago. Did they even have SD cards back then? Anyway, I'm shocked. then I thought to myself, well, I've got an SD card. I'll plug it in there, but I'll bet you the Dell Mini 10 won't boot to an SD card. I bet you it won't. I mean, I don't have any, none of my expensive laptops in this house, with the exception of that IdeaPad sitting over there, will boot from an SD card. None of them will. The IdeaPad's the only one. There's no way the Dell engineers would make the Dell Mini 10 from 13 years ago boot from an SD card. I mean, just the thought of it is laughable. Nonetheless, I plugged in a 64 gigabyte SD card, you know, large SD card, and I instructed the USB installed Fugua to i386 to make a new drive of it and give me an encrypted D storage partition and set up a swap and everything else, which it did gleefully. And some 10-15 minutes later, I had one. So then I said, well, here goes nothing. So I halted the system, took the USB pin drive out, and put it back in the box, leaving only the SD card in here. Pushed the power button and then hit F12 to select my boot method. And when I did, I did not see SD card in the list of boot options, and I thought, oh, well, I'm screwed. You know, I'm not going to be able to boot from that. So I turned the power off again, put the USB stick back in there, and just booted normally from the USB stick, thinking, well, it was too much to ask for Dell to be able to boot to an SD card from a 13-year-old machine. They probably didn't even know how to back then. You know, I'm sure it was new technology. At any rate, you can boot from the SD card in Fuguita, and as it comes up, it allows you to select the operating system drive, which I changed immediately from SD0, which was the current USB stick that I had plugged in, to SD1, which was the actual card that I just installed to, the SD card. And then I ask it to open the encrypted D partition on that SD card and bring those contents into memory so that we could start the operating system. And that all worked fine. Once it got booted, I could pull the USB stick out and not have to worry about it. And I proceeded to then plug in a larger USB drive and begin to dump the contents of one partition after another, changing them from FFS1 to FFS2, one at a time. I mean, this process took from 3 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday till like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. It was really quite late before I finished with it. And it did take a long time to dump the contents of each one of those partitions, especially user local. That was massive. That's where all the programs are stored. And then put it back on in an FFS2 format. And all that worked fine. In the morning, I decided that I would go ahead and reboot the system and see how my work had come along. And when I did, I found that I screwed up the bootloader and OpenBSD would not boot on the Dell Mini 10. I couldn't get an operating system to boot. So without thinking about it, I rebooted again and pushed the F12 key and pushed the boot from USB device from the bootable selection, and the system began to came up. But what I realized was I didn't have my USB pin drive plugged in. You see, the Dell Mini 10 counts an SD card as a USB drive. And it did boot up from the SD drive. The card drive. Using the boot USB drive option, which is different from the IdeaPad, where it tells you that it's an SD card. You know, the BIOS prompt is different. Well, I was just happier than hell because this is the second machine and the oldest machine in the house that could boot from an SD card, and I was just floored. I mean, Dell really impresses me with the Dell Mini 10. This little laptop is more capable than most of the other brands of laptops that have been made since 2007. I mean, it's just
extraordinary. It's extraordinary what Dell did with the BIOS and how well this thing works. Even though it's only got a 250 gigabyte hard drive, that's more than enough for me to get around on and a plug-in couple of terabyte USB drive when I need some extra storage. You know, it's great. Lightweight. Everything works as if it were designed by aliens from another planet. It's really amazing. So anyway, I still had the problem of fixing my my broken boot on the main hard drive for the installed version of OpenBSD 6.7. So what I decided to do next was I just took the install 67.filesystem image from OpenBSD for the i386 version, put that to another SD stick, then I had the operating system boot into that, and I reinstalled OpenBSD doing an upgrade, which you can do. And what all the upgrade will do, you're probably thinking I just wiped my operating system out. No, because that's not the way OpenBSD works. It doesn't reformat everything. It just upgrades everything back to the initial start of OpenBSD 6.7. And it repairs the bootloader for you. So when you reboot from that process, you're sitting at patch zero. In other words, you have to do a sys patch and have the system automatically fix itself for the last 10 patches, which is all you have to do. Then reboot from that, and everything is fixed and running. And that's great. You know, I like that, and everything's running. I'm making this recording to you using the Dell Mini 10. The file system's all fixed, and I now have a SD card i386 version of Fugitive with set to patch 10 that I can use for an emergency operating system should things go bad. By the way, I can also take that i386 version and boot it on the IdeaPad 330 and use it for an emergency operating system as well if I needed that in some capacity. So at any rate, it was a successful adventure. Took quite a long time to do, but we have everything set up the way we want it now, and I think I'll probably just continue to use the Dell Mini 10 because I'm not liking the new systems. There was some talk that Lenovo was going to build another ThinkPad that would be of the same build quality as, say, the X220, you know, or some variant of ThinkPad from the past. I haven't heard if they have decided to do that yet or not, but if they do, I might be interested in it. But honestly, I'm still waiting for somebody to develop, like maybe the Pinebook might be an answer, even though I'm not sure what the build quality is of the Pinebook. The Pinebook is one of the first examples, I believe, of us getting away from the Intel architecture and not having a management engine and not having to worry about Spectre attacks, you know, which I think would make everybody happier. Because Intel just isn't doing it for us. You know, if Intel really cared about us as a company, in my opinion, they'd remove the management engine, so would AMD. There's no reason for them to have it in a machine that we own. And they need to redesign their chip to avoid the Spectre attacks. Or maybe RISC-V will come into play someday, and we'll start seeing that. Who knows? But anyway, I'm very happy and all excited about this, and also surprised to find out that the 386 version of OpenBSD actually runs fairly competitively with Linux Mint 19.3. Seriously. I mean, of course you're going to have more programs and maybe a few extra desktop features with the Cinnamon desktop that you're not going to have with XFCE or GNOME 3 or whatever you get with OpenBSD. But really, there's just not enough in Linux that interests me that I'd want to play with it for the risk. I'm not getting the performance I once did, and a lot of the applications that they are putting in flat packs that you can get for these systems like Linux Mint, for instance, Telegram. You know, we have Telegram here at OpenBSD. You can get Telegram Purple, and I don't run it because it requires you to give them a phone number. And it seems like every time somebody comes up with some newfangled thing, it's either proprietary or somebody's found a serious security flaw in it, like with Telegram's, what do they call it, group chat, which is not encrypted, that anybody can read. Kind of bad news for everybody. But, yeah, I prefer more secure. As far as performance goes, I think I've got enough just out of the Dell Mini 10 to make me happy. Seriously. I mean, I can make videos, produce audio files, make shows for Hacker Public Radio, do whatever I need to do with this operating system. Linux, they're moving away from the 386 variant. Maybe OpenBSD will someday, and if that happens, then maybe the Dell Mini 10 is finally dead. You know, I won't be able to find an operating system for it. That will be a sad day, really, for a really great notebook that has only 1 gigabyte of RAM in it and a small hard drive. I mean, this thing has just been my pal for a long time. I mean, every time I take it into a room, people look at it. They want to see it because, you know, they haven't manufactured this particular device for over a decade. And it's still very attractive to everyone that looks at it. It's a wanted item. So if you can find a Dell Mini 10 in a garage sale or on eBay or whatnot and might need some refurbishing, you know, it might be worth your trouble just to get one to play with it. All right. I'm going to cut this podcast off because I can't think of anything else to add to it. I'm not going to make it quite an hour, but it has been an exciting 48 hours for me, and I've really enjoyed working on OpenBSD and the Dell Mini 10. I hope you all have a great day. Take care of yourselves. Happy 4th of July to all my American friends.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.